Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 3, The Birth of Lord Krishna, Text 32. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Tameva Purva Sange Buk Prishni Swayambhuve Sati Tadayam Sutapa Nama Prajapatir Akab Nashaha. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Supreme Personality of God had said to Devaki, Twam you, Eva, indeed, Purvasarge, in a previous millennium, Abu became Prishni, by the name Prishni, Swayambhuve, the millennium of Swayambhuva Manu, Sati, O supremely chaste, Tada, at that time, I am Vasudeva, Sutapa, Nama, by the name, Prajapati, Akalmasha, a spotlessly pious person. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Supreme Personality of God had replied, My dear mother, best of the chaste, in your previous birth, in the Swayambhuva millennium, you were known as Prishni, and Vasudev, who was the most pious Prajapati, was named Sutapa. Purport. Supreme Personality of God had made it clear that Devaki had not become his mother only now. Rather, she had been his mother previously also. Krishna is eternal and is the selection of a father and mother from among his devotees takes place eternally. Previously also, Devaki had been the Lord's mother and Vasudev, the Lord's father, and they were named Prishni and Sutapa. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, he accepts his eternal father and mother, and they accept Krishna as their son. This pastime takes place eternally and is therefore called Nitya Lila. Thus, there was no cause for surprise or ridicule. As confirmed by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita 4:9, Janma Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yo Veti Tatvataha Tyaktva Deham Punar Janma Naiti Mam Eti Sorjana. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. One should try to understand the appearance and disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from Vedic authorities, not from imagination. One who follows his imagination about the Supreme Personality of Godhead is condemned. Avijananti mamuda manushim tanam ashityam param bhavam avjanato mamabhuta maheshwaram. The Lord appears as the son of his devotee by his param bhavam. The word bhavam refers to the stage of pure love. It has nothing to do with material transactions. Sri Bhagavan Vacha Tam Eva Purva Sargebu Prishni Swayambhave Sati Tadayam Sutapa Nama Prajapatir Akamashaha. Supreme Personality of God had replied, My dear mother, best of the chaste. In your previous birth in the Swayambhuva millennium, you were known as Prishni, and Vasudeva, who was the most pious Prajapati, was named Sutapa. There are a number of points in this particular verse. One is that Krishna and his pastimes are Nitya Lila. There it says, Nitya Nava 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 Yavana. That is, Krishna's pastimes are always fresh and new. Material means, after some time, it becomes distasteful. But spiritual means that it becomes more and more relishable. Just like, somehow or another, most of us are trying to chant Hare Krishna every day. We generally probably don't get up in the morning thinking, oh my, what a great opportunity. I'm going to chant at least 16, maybe 64 rounds a day. We don't sit down thinking, oh, I'm about to enter in an ocean of spiritual happiness with Krishna's name, form, quality, and pastimes. Hopefully we're thinking like that, but not necessarily. But still, we do it anyhow. Now, we told everyone to chant Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, 16 rounds. If it wasn't for prasadam, probably most of us would disappear. So there must be something different about chanting Hare Krishna that makes it ever fresh. Now, how much we can actually experience the happiness of chanting Hare Krishna. In other words, Krishna is the ocean of Ananda. He's the source of all love, of all beauty, of everything, and especially he's a reservoir of pleasure, unlimited pleasure. If he's in every atom, everywhere in the universe that we're in, all the universes, and the universes are just a little cloud in the spiritual sky, insignificant cloud. And Goloka Vrindavan, every Vaikuntha planet is as big as the material universe. And all the Vaikuntha planets could fit into Goloka Vrindavan. So big is Krishna. And as big as he is, he's that much full of bliss. That much full of pleasure. Now that's called inconceivable for us, because if we get one fraction of a fraction of a drop of pleasure, we think we've become perfect. But there's an unlimited ocean. For that reason, all the devotees of Krishna who swim in that ocean don't want to leave the ocean. They want to dive deeper into it. And because it's Nitya Nava Nava Yavana, therefore, it's constantly increasing. So every time Krishna comes and displays his pastimes in different universes, because there are unlimited universes, practically speaking, and Krishna, when he disappears, one pastime disappears in this universe, like the appearance of Krishna in the prison of Kamsa, then Krishna, as soon as that pastime ends in this universe or in some universe, immediately appears in another universe. So it's going on eternally like that. And yet it's never hackneyed. It's not that Devaki and Vasudeva said that we did this so many times, you know, could we do something different this time? I mean, prison, Kamsa, could we just have a little variety? I mean, it's really getting a little tiresome doing the same pastime eternally, moment after moment. But actually it gets more and more blissful. And as far as we can understand, this pastime is perfect for developing a certain mood. And it's the mood that actually is progress. Now we think progress is taller buildings or faster cars. But in the spiritual world, the progress is developing a certain mood of love and affection. And what could be a better circumstance than to be born in a prison. In other words, if a child is born in a prison and he's about to be killed by some huge demon, how much protectiveness would the mother feel for the child? Can there be a better circumstance? Maybe if you're in the middle of a desert and a dragon appeared to eat your child, maybe you feel great protection, great attachment for the child. But this is good enough. Being born in a dark prison cell with a big demon about to come and kill the poor little baby, and the most beautiful baby is born, mother and Devaki and Vasudeva are overwhelmed with bliss, and Devaki wants to protect her child. So this feeling of wanting to protect Krishna is eternally increasing, because Krishna is always becoming more beautiful. He's unlimitedly beautiful already, but in his pastimes he's ever becoming more beautiful due to the desire, due to the concern of his devotees. When Krishna experiences the love of his devotees, that increases his beauty. And when his beauty increases, the love of his devotees increase. And so eternally there's a competition between Krishna's beauty and the love of his devotees for Krishna. They're eternally increasing. So we can also experience that, just like if we read or we chant Hare Krishna, then it's ever fresh, if we're fresh. If we're not in the mode of ignorance, which is not exactly fresh, or impassion, if somehow or another we put our minds into the mode of goodness, then we can experience the freshness of transcendence. What's not fresh is not transcendence. The modes of ignorance and the mode of passion is never fresh. It's always disturbing. Similarly, all the pictures of Krishna are actually not different from Krishna. They're actually Krishna's pastimes. Krishna appears in his pictures, and they're ever fresh, because the pastimes are fresh. Therefore, we can look at these pictures and again and again, and if we're a little conscious of Krishna, they're ever fresh. And similarly, if we're doing devotional service in Krishna consciousness, it's ever fresh, whatever we're doing, especially if we're remembering Krishna, who makes everything fresh. And if we forget Krishna, and we forget its devotional service, we don't even have the idea that I'm trying to do something for Krishna, whoever he may be, then it becomes boring after some time. And if it's boring, then we'll give it up, like we give up everything else that's boring. Bhoga tyaga. Sometimes we try to enjoy something, and after some time we become bored, and we give it up, and we go on to the next thing. Even prasadam, how many gulabjamuns can you eat before you get tired of eating gulabjamuns? You want at least try a little bit of the samosa. And how many samosas can one eat before one wants to try a gulabjamun? Variety. So even in spiritual life, there's variety. Krishna does not only, Srimati Radharani prepares a whole, and not only her, but even Jasoda, Rohini, the cowherd girls, they're always preparing dishes for Krishna's breakfast. I mean, we have breakfast, it's usually pretty simple, but they have preparation after preparation. Luckily, they also have a spiritual stomach. So it can all fit in. But even after they eat all this prasadam eternally, Krishna goes to his room and lies on his left side. So even there's a kind of happiness feeling your stomach full in the spiritual world. Or as they say in Spanish, briga llena corazón contento. You know what that means? Yes, contento. So when our stomach is full, our heart is pleased. So that's, Krishna feels that pleasure too. Although he can devour the whole universe is in his mouth. He showed it to Mother Jasoda. So that means he has a pretty big stomach if you can put the whole universe in your mouth. Because maybe he didn't swallow it. He just keeps it there. But still, all these things that we enjoy here temporarily, Krishna is enjoying eternally. And we can also enjoy them eternally if we develop our spiritual body. Spiritual consciousness doesn't mean just some kind of theoretical knowledge about Krishna. It means to actually awaken our spiritual body, which has spiritual senses. And those spiritual senses can enjoy simultaneously different varieties of pleasure. Simultaneously. Right now, when we're eating prasadam even, if we don't pay attention, we forget what we just ate. Someone asks you, what did you have for prasadam today? We have to start thinking, what was there? Because we didn't pay attention. Similarly, even listening about Krishna, which is supposed to be an ocean of nectar, when we don't pay attention, we don't even hear what's being said. Our body's there, but our mind is wandering somewhere else. And therefore we ask someone, what did I just say? That we forget which, that we're even reading the Bhagavatam. But to speak of what was just said. So therefore the art of Krishna consciousness, first of all, is the art of paying attention. And paying attention is a product of our determination. And our determination is a product of what our expectations, what our faith is. If we had some higher taste, some better experience, then of course, then when we have an opportunity, then we pay more attention, hoping that this time it's even going to be nicer. It's going to be even more enjoyable. And therefore, with determination, because of our higher taste that we experience, we put even more attention. But if we don't get a higher taste this time, then we lose interest after some time. Therefore, we can even experience a higher taste. But if we don't keep on with determination to experience that higher taste again and follow the process in order to do so, then after some time we lose interest and start looking for another taste, another experience. Therefore, especially hearing is important because it can keep our determination on track. Keep on putting our intelligence into the process of devotional service to become conscious of Krishna, and therefore hopefully experiencing progressive, higher and higher tastes by Krishna's arrangement and mercy. Another important factor in this verse is what Prabhupada says, param bhavam ajananto. That devotional service is revealed by bhava. If we're covered by the illusory energy at the present moment, and we have an illusory experience of existence, it's because according to Krishna, dumena vriyataye vanira, itardar shomalena cha, itobain avrita garbas, ta tenedam avritam. As the fire is covered by smoke, as the mirror is covered by dust, or as the embryo is covered by the womb, so the living entity is covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust. So, of course, we think lust is, you know, some kind of abstract energy. Although then Krishna says, it's avritam gyan etena gyanino nityavarina kamarupena kuntiya dusprena analena cha. Thus a man's pure consciousness is covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. So we want to know what lust is like, that burning sensation when you want something and you don't get it immediately. They call it love. Krishna calls it kam or lust. So that kam or lust covers the living entity, and therefore we don't experience reality. The blissful reality. We experience our reality, which is full of pain and suffering, most of the time, and then some alleviation from that pain and suffering, and we call that happiness. We have a toothache, we're suffering. But we don't have a toothache, we don't run down the street yelling out, "I don't have a toothache, I feel so good." But as soon as our toothache goes away, then we think, "Oh, I'm in bliss. This is life is good." Life is not as bad as it was when we had the toothache, but it's still not really good. But unless we can get that hard taste of Krishna consciousness, bhava, the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness, then of course we have to start looking around for eating, sleeping, mating, defending, because there is a kind of happiness coming from those. There's a taste from eating, sleeping, mating, defending, but it's just temporary and it's very insignificant, according to Prahlad Maharaj, compared to spiritual happiness. But if one has not experienced spiritual happiness, we can't compare material happiness to spiritual happiness, because we haven't experienced it to a large extent. Or if we have, and we don't keep with determination to try to revive it and increase it, then we forget about it after some time. That's one of the aspects of the material energy, is apario smriti. As soon as we turn our face away from Krishna, vaya dvitiya vinesha tasyat asyasa, vayam dvitiya vinesha tasyat asyat vipario smriti, then we forget. Daksha, after his prayers to Lord Krishna in his birth, after he was Daksha, that he had his head cut off and he had the head of a goat. He said it, he soon left his body. I mean, it's a little embarrassing having have a head of a goat. Could you imagine, you know, you go home to see your parents if they're still alive and your head has been replaced with that of a goat? What happened? Oh, it's, you know, I just took my makeup off. It's nothing, you know. I'll look better tomorrow. Now imagine having the head of a goat. They're very embarrassing. Friends say, "What happened?" "Well, it's a long story. I'll tell you some other time." So he left his body due to his embarrassment. And he took birth again as a daksha in another millennium. And he understood that he had a mission in life to propagate the universe. He was dutiful daksha. Otherwise he would never have become daksha, prajapati, head prajapati in the universe. It takes a lot of pious activities, a lot of sense and mind control. But anyone who's not striving for pure consciousness of Krishna is striving for some variety of sense gratification. So he, due to his piety, he was able to have vast amounts of sense gratification. And this time he knew that the source, he was intelligent enough to know that if he was going to become empowered for sense gratification, to do his duty for sense gratification, it wasn't just sense gratification, he also did his duty to propagate the universe. Then he had to be empowered by Lord Vishnu, and therefore he prayed to Lord Vishnu in beautiful prayers so that Vishnu would come and benedict him. And indeed, his prayers were so powerful that even Lord Vishnu came to give him benediction. And Daksha, in the presence of Lord Vishnu, felt practically unlimited pleasure, transcendental pleasure. But the next moment he forgot, because his aim was not pure devotional service. The transcendental pleasure was just a byproduct of Lord Vishnu coming to give him benedictions. And therefore, as soon as he asked for his benediction, he forgot about the transcendental pleasure pleasure he had just experienced, and just asked for more sense gratification. So the material nature is empowered to help us forget. Therefore, Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura has advised us that periodically we should try to remember the greatest happiness, times of greatest happiness we've experienced in Krishna consciousness, so we'll experience it again to some degree or another, and that will encourage us to go on with our service. And if we don't remember, if we're not present now in this, our present circumstances, and try to perform devotional service to Krishna and remember Krishna in that way, then we'll be, and if we don't remember our past experiences in Krishna consciousness, then either we'll see everything as an opportunity for sense gratification now in different varieties, or when we think about the past, we'll either hanker or lament over our material past situations. So somehow or another, one has to try to remember and try to achieve progressive higher states of consciousness and happiness in Krishna consciousness, and even remember the previous states of happiness and raising of consciousness in Krishna consciousness. But bhava is our goal, feeling, ecstasy. And to get ecstasy doesn't require necessarily, like Daksha was not in love with Krishna. Just like if we examine our hearts, we may not feel an overwhelming desire to please Krishna because we hardly know Krishna. Still, if we somehow or another learn the art of focusing our body, our mind, and our words on Krishna, then the result is we'll experience transcendental ecstasy. And that ecstasy will free us as the blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, so does the fire of transcendental knowledge burn to ashes the reactions of our previous activities. So that fire of ecstasy by associating with Krishna, by remembering him, or by his revealing himself to us, means that the material contamination covering our senses, our mind, and our intelligence, and producing the false ego, will gradually be dissipated by the fire, will be burnt up by the fire of Krishna's association. And the result is that things will become clearer. We'll be able to see things in the right perspective. We'll be able to even taste things in the right perspective. Everything will become clearer, and the path to liberation will become more clear and more encouraging. It's just a question of our effort that we put into it. And if we have some other goal, that's all right. If we have faith that other goal can be achieved, if we focus our mind and give our attention to Krishna much quicker than any other methodology. Of course, if our goal is Krishna conscious, or can be utilized in Krishna service, then Krishna is much more disposed to fulfill it. And if we try to do it on our own, then we might get it if we make a great endeavor like everyone else in the material world, or if we're actually just being foolish and want a goal which is actually not very beneficial for us or anyone else, then Krishna will frustrate us. And then, of course, as Urmila Mataji was saying, we'll blame Krishna for frustrating us and we'll get angry at him. Why, I did my service, where's your service? What are you doing? I did what I was supposed to do. Now give me my paycheck. Krishna may do that, but that's not really for our benefit. If we're actually sincere, then Krishna will keep us frustrated until we finally surrender. Like Vallabhacharya kept on challenging Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees with his great knowledge, because he was a highly intelligent personality, but he was defeated every time. And finally, he was intelligent enough to start considering why he's always being frustrated in his dealing with the devotees, because previously, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Navadvip, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very kind to him. And now it appears that he was trying to frustrate him. So then he thought, well, I'm just like Indra, that he was trying to disturb Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, and Krishna frustrated him so that he'd surrender and realize his arrogance. So Balabhacharya realized, I'm just being arrogant, I don't have the proper mood, and therefore Krishna is frustrating me, So then he went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and surrendered. So that's the goal, to develop that attitude of surrender to Krishna. And Krishna will try to help us if we're sincere, if we don't become so inimical, so defiant that we give up devotional service and try something else to satisfy ourselves. So I'll stop there. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Okay. Kwala Grantharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.